Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer and author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Raising Chickens. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, September 12th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, of course, you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. If you're listening live right now, all you have to do is scroll down just a little bit on your computer screen. The chat room has automatically opened up. You're automatically in the chat room if you're listening live, but you're in there as a guest. We would love for you to take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come into the chat room, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, participate, post any comments you would like, and talk about our hobby and passion of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I would like to thank you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex. Natural control of intestinal parasites.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com. That's MTHealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Monday, but we're going to make it through another week together, I assure you. And we've got some great guests and some great topics this week that you're going to love. But, of course, we cannot start a week. The week would just be horrible. The week would just not be as exciting as always. And we would probably get off on the wrong foot and have bad luck all week if I didn't bring on, right now, my wonderful co-host, hopefully advocate and author, compost queen, Pat Forman.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Whisper, Monday is our fun day. Here we go. I've already had just an amazing Monday. It feels like Friday. So maybe we've got a new motto here. Monday is our fun day. How are you doing, and how was your weekend?
Monday is fun day, or maybe Monday is the new Friday. I don't know about that. But my weekend, Pat, was absolutely fabulous. First off, I'm going to see if you got my instant message I sent over to you.
Let me see.
Okay, I'm just check that is while it, I'm ramping on. But I had a fabulous
from the chat room.
From the chat room, yep. Send you over an instant message. Fabulous weekend. Friday evening, often person who comes in the chat room, USMC vet was here. My good friend Phil. He came down Friday evening. Had a good Friday night. Just catching up. Catching up on old times. Saturday morning, we woke up early, had a great breakfast, and then we went to our ham radio our ham radio class on Saturday. It was all day from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. The initial class was from 8 to 4, and then we took the certification test for just the basic ham radio. And hang on just a second. And so we took that. You didn't have to learn Morse code for this particular certification, but you do become a licensed ham radio technician, I think is the level. Technician, and there's general, and then there's, I don't know, several others, different levels. But we were glad we took it. We had a good time. We had some laughs during the class, and I had a few sweats beads on my brow when we had to go and take the test. But but we did fine. I passed. He passed. Did fabulous that night. We had a great supper. Sunday woke up, went to church, and then we started looking around for some property he was interested in, some hunting property, and I think he found some property he may jump on. So my weekend was fabulous. Today. It's absolutely crazy. So I guess Pat, you must not have gotten the message.
I got it.
Okay, good.
Yep, I got it right here. Yeah, I just responded, I think. But yeah,
okay,
that's fine. No problem with that.
Peter Brown coming on, absolutely fabulous. Everybody loves Mondays. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, if he will be taking calls, he'll have a subject he'll be talking about today, 347-637-3237. But we had a fabulous weekend. It was awesome. And today, however, is a little hectic around here. I have posted some pictures on the Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. It's a property improvement day. Everything just kind of, as you know, out there in life in general, everything happens at once. But this morning, my general helper showed up this morning to clean out the barn a little bit. He started working, and then about 8 o'clock, the whole cavalry came. We got a bucket truck. We got a stump grinder. We got a backhoe. We have a bobcat with a grapple on the front. We've got the chimney sweep here. We've got a dump truck to haul away something. Oh my goodness, everything's going on at once. So yeah, it's fabulous. We're having the old barn torn down. So we're having that torn down. Oh. Come on in. We're having the old barn torn down Okay, I'll be right there, Jen. And so, in fact, I'm being called now to go talk to the chimney sweep. So we're having the old barn tore down. We're having some leveling done on our back lot, so I can harrow it a little bit more and add a little bit of space to my garden. We're having some brush piles hauled off. We had a dump truck with one of those grabbers on it, and they've been here since about 8 this morning, and they're still working. In fact, they're stump grinding now. And so I'll have to put myself on mute because a couple of them are right outside this window. So doing a little property improvement here at the homestead. Finally, this has been in the works for a couple of months. You know, got to save up your pennies. But everything just happened to fall on today. And I think they'll be able to wrap up today and not have to come back tomorrow, which will be fabulous. So we can get all that done today. We're clearing a little area for some fencing we want to put up and whatnot. So busy day because of that, because Jen poked her head in and said, hey, chimney sweep man needs to talk to you, probably needs to get paid. So I'm going to, but like I said in the message to you, Pat, I will be in and out. I'll try to be here for the most of the show possibly can. Just go out and stupid buys and then come back in a little bit, go back outside and stupid buys a little bit more and come back in. Oh, we're getting caps put on our chimneys. The chimney sweep already swept, but he's putting caps on the chimneys. Because we had chimney sweeps, and we call them down here chimney sweeps. Some people call them something else. And so, we've had birds in our chimneys for the last really 4 years, and this year they came back with vengeance. Jen was standing outside one evening after they all flew in. I went and banged on the chimney and whatnot on the wall, and she counted about 70 birds that flew out of just one chimney. Needless to say, we had to get the chimney sweep in here and clean all our chimneys out really good, make them like new, and then we're putting the caps on, really nice stainless steel caps, so the birds don't fly in, but yet the coal-burning fireplaces are functional. We've got really four fireplaces, two chimneys that go straight up through the attic and out the top, and two of the rooms are coal-burning, two of the rooms are wood-burning, so we wanted to make sure they were in shape in case we needed to burn some coal or burn some fire to keep warm. And as a backup, so we're getting that done. But it's just a little madhouse here today. But the show must go on. The show must go on.
Absolutely.
And we got a great show for you today. Every single Monday, we are so proud to have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, here. And
And we've got, oh, there's a USMC Vet is in the chat room. So we were just talking about USMC Vet. What an awesome time we had this weekend. One of my best friends in the whole world. And so it was always good to see him come down and show him around the homestead and our garden spot and all that good stuff. And I think he may have found a little piece of land he might be interested in as too when he was down here. So that's that'll be good if that pans out. And So glad to see USMC Vet in the chat room along with many others that are there. Well, let's see, we've got Allison, we got Bard Rock, we got many guests. If you'll register guests, then you can get your own screen name like Heather and Jesse and Kim and Moving Tricycle. How awesome is that? Is that tricycle? Yeah, tricycle. MT Kathy, NJ. Oh, the Stump Grinders right outside the window. Ozark Homesteader, thank you. We'll talk awful lot about many homesteading things here on the radio show. So thank you very much for joining us in the chat room. Pat, I'm going to put myself on mute because it's about to get really shaky and loud here. Okay. I'll let you carry on. Any chickens in the news, any weekend announcements you had, any things that are coming up. And then if you'll just check the switchboard when our good friend Peter Brown comes on, bring him on. We can take some calls, get that number announced, and we'll take some calls for him. And I'm sure he'll have a topic he'll be discussing too.
Okay, great. No problem. Well, have great. Fun with all the events going on over there.
And, as soon as possibly can.
keep breathing, Whisper. It's no problem. I've got a bunch of chickens in the news, and Peter
you.
Is always a wealth of information. So
yes,
just
is.
Do what you need to do. Okay. Okay, well, first off, just in fact, now I'd like to invite the chat room to kind of join in to the chicken chat, or the what I sometimes call the coop side cat chat while we're sitting here just kind of chewing on some things. But I've got to tell you, I had just a wonderful weekend. As I'd mentioned on Friday, we went over to the Virginia Horse Center, where they were having the draft horse pole contest competition. And I had never been to a draft pole horse competition before, been tractor poles, but not a horse, draft horse. These huge, absolutely magnificent animals. I mean, they were just, I could stand there and just look up their noses. They were so big, and their chests were just so broad. They were absolutely stunning. There were about, I would guess, 15 teams there, 12 to 15 teams. And they ended up pulling over the two horses in a team that evening ended up pulling over 7,500 pounds. And they called the competition to an end because they were afraid they were going to start to hurt the horses if they put any more weight on there. They would put it in 500-pound increments on the sled, and they would they were straining, but they were absolutely magnificent. And then even better than that, after the tractor competition, was Wendell Berry, who is one of America's just amazing riders. I think of him as the Will Rogers of sustainable agriculture. Will Rogers, for those of you that might not know, during the early movie days, just was a critic of a very funny critic of Washington, and just one of these no-nonsense. He had a cowboy act that he went along with his little lasso, and he would just entertain people across the country with really, really good common sense. So in a way, that's how Wendell Berry is to me. I've read his works, gosh, for three decades now, I guess, and he wrote The Unsettling of America, for example, and he was honored at the White House last month for his sustainable ag writing. So anyway, I was able to meet Wendell, shake his hand, got his autograph on one of his books that I've been wanting to do, and he talked about local agriculture, and he went in, of course, saying that you're not going to get the states to so much take action. You're not going to get the federal government to take action so much on local agriculture. Where it's really going to have to come from is from the communities. It's going to have to come from the mayors and the city councils and places that are local, that can support local, and that's where change will happen. So he really put up a call to arms to say, and if you're interested in where your food comes, it's got to be local. That's the our future of agriculture. It's not sustainable the way we're doing it. And we've talked about that quite a bit on the show as well. And also at the at Wendell's talk was Joel Salatin and his family and all their interns. So I was able to see Joel again. I've also known Joel for about 30 years, and his wife Teresa. We're great buddies. But Joel has a book coming out now in October that I'd like to put a heads up about. And that book is called Folks, This Ain't Natural, or This Ain't Right. I forget if Ain't Natural Ain't Right. I think it's Folks, This Ain't Right. And he goes into how we're literally destroying ourselves as well as the environment with a lot of the commercial food practices. And if we really want to have civilization that is going to endure, we need to get back to local food. So that was kind of the clarion call of both Wendell Berry's work and Joel's book that's coming up. It'll be released in October. So that was kind of my weekend. I had so much fun with that. And as far as chickens in the news, now let's go on to that. And, of course, our chickens in the news, I've got quite a bit, and it's brought to us compliments of Meyer Hatchery.
Since 1985, Meyer Hatchery in Polk, Ohio has been a family-owned and operated business. Meyer Hatchery is a year-round hatchery that offers over 160 breeds of poultry, including chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, guineas, peafowl, and game birds, plus a full line of feed and supplies. Just need a few baby chicks? No problem. Meyer Hatchery will ship as few as 3 baby chicks. Check them out online at MeyerHatchery.com. That's MeyerHatchery.com.
All righty, chickens in the news here. Chickens in the news, it's interesting because it comes right along with what about the theme of this weekend, which really got me excited again about local agriculture. And this one, I need just a second here because I've got to plug in my cell phone. It's going to go dead if I don't. This one is an article that comes to us. It's called "Consumers Deserve to Know Where Food Comes From," says Dr. Smith. And this has and the scientific ramifications for such knowledge that allow all of us, you, me, and our future generations to make prudent purchasing choices. And this is kind of a little essay, in an essay form, but I really liked it. Interestingly, it's coming out of Canada. So it's not just here in the U.S., but this is coming out of Canada. And it says, while at the grocery store, I'm reading this now, and out at the grocery store, I overheard a woman ask an employee about eggs from the free-range chickens. How often do they get out of their eggs? She wanted to know. And the reply was, well, ma'am, our chickens are cage-free as we can find. But how free are they really free? I mean, how often do they get out of the cages? They are as cage-free as we can find, he repeated. So I wondered if my neighbor's chickens would be cage-free. They stay mostly in their coop to lay their eggs, and that keeps them away from predators. Because many of us have lost the knowledge about where our food comes from, many of us also lost trust in our food supply. And I think that's a real key thing here about trust in our food supply and trust in labeling and trust that what we're eating is good for us. And he is a respected food scientist at Colorado State University, which, by the way, is the same university that Temple Grandin, the animal scientist, autism advocate, teaches at. So we have lost trust in our food supply. He says, what if we knew this every food we ate? He asks. He says, where did it come from? Who grew it? How was it grown? How differently would we eat if we knew the people who produced our food? And I got to tell you, that's something that I really enjoy when I go to the local farmer's market. We're lucky enough to have two of them in Rockford County. I know the people who are growing quite a few of the foods that I eat. So this is Dr. Smith. Dr. Smith says consumers deserve to know where food comes from. And not just that, now we got to be responsible, and the scientific ramifications of such knowledge that allow us to make prudent purchasing choices. Now, here's some interesting facts about the food that we eat. Quote, organic, according to USDA, organic means that a food is at least 95% organically produced, and the remainder can be non-organic or synthetic ingredients. Now, USDA certified organic must be produced from zero synthetic ingredients and must meet federal organic standards. The term, quote, made with organic ingredients, end quote, means that it must have at least 5% ingredients. Now, here's a question for our listeners. Here's the question. If you buy food that is organic and certified, USDA, Does it tell you anything about the nutritional value of that food? Does USDA organic about the types of living soils or not soils or any kind of soils it was grown in? No, it doesn't. It doesn't tell you if it was a food that was selected for antioxidants or some of the heritage vegetables that were used and developed before the new organic, the new pesticides and herbicides, and those sort of chemicals were added. It doesn't tell you anything about that. So there is some evidence that's saying that post-World War II seeds and foods that were developed are nutritionally much less than the heritage breeds, and than if they're grown on soils that aren't living, a lot of that nutrition cannot percolate up through the food chain to both the animals as well as to us. So what USDA Organic tells you, it simply says certain chemicals have not been used in the growing or processing of that food. That's all it says, certain toxic or known to be harmful. Well, that means that they can't be used, that statement cannot be put on pork or poultry labels because they're already raised without hormones. Apparently that's not an industry practice. Now, natural, according to the USDA, means minimally processed with no additives. And he says here, that could be true of an apple or a poisonous mushroom. Natural, it could be true of cholera. I mean, we really don't know what natural means anymore. Now, naturally raised, according to Dr. Smith, has no definition at all. We can't hear anything. Let's see. I can look into the chat room now that I'm not getting much reception. Is that better? How's this sound? Is this any better? Am I still cutting out Rhode Island Ruby? Do I need to call back in? Question. Sound check. Hello. Are you hearing me at all? Okay. I'm cutting out a bunch, and I'm missing all this good information. Okay. I tell you, no cutting out from Heather. Okay, so should I continue on the way I am, or should I call back in again? Yes, better, bad again, call back in. Okay, there's going to be a little bit of dead space, so I'm going to go ahead and call back in. So hold on, I'll be right back. Okay, back in here. Now, sound check, if you can let me know if this is any better. And I've adjusted a couple of things here. So sound check in the chat room, and otherwise I'm just going to continue on. I'm not going to go back and repeat this, what we've been saying, but CW, by the way, is having a bunch of work done at his house today, so he's going to be in and out during the rest of the show, and he will be back checking in. Apparently he's got bats in his belfry and chimney sweeps there and trees being taken out and all kinds of stuff going on at this little homestead there. Okay, so what we're talking about is the customers deserve to know where food comes from, and we were just going about the different scientific ramifications. One of them is that the term USDA organic or organic doesn't mean, that doesn't really tell you anything about the nutrition of the food, and this is according to Dr. Smith from the University of Colorado. So it doesn't tell you if the plants were selected for antioxidants, what kind of nutritional value they have. It doesn't say if they were grown in living soils or whatever soil. So USDA organic basically means certain types of what's considered toxic or not good chemicals were not used in growing that food. Okay. Natural means minimally processed, and naturally raised, if you see that on a meat label, has pretty much no definition at all. So that's interesting, that one, and I'm going to go ahead with skip over to this next one that comes to us. And by the way, yes, Free to Roam now is, this is the next, that is taken to court. This is by Simon Lauder. And what Simon is saying, that several major meat companies are promoting their animals as free to roam. Free to roam, and that's now taken to court for misleading consumers. Now, you'd think this was from the U.S., but it's not. It is from Australia. This comes to us from Australia. And let's see. There's a question in the chat room, but I'll get to that later. The Australian Competition and the Consumer Commission, they're going to federal court because allegedly barn-raised chickens are not free to roam. And the companies say that anything otherwise is breaking the law. So what they're saying in their own words, that the population density of meat chickens raised in barns preclude any movement. This is allegedly misleading. That free to roam is misleading. That whole label is pretty much they're not free to roam. And what they're saying is the companies have implied that their chickens have substantial space to roam about. There's even an open door at the end of the barn. They can go out in the sunshine if they want to. But the truth is they can't walk very much. For one thing, they're probably Cornish cross and they're just low to the ground and pretty wide. And the other thing is they can't even hardly have more than a meter, according to this article, where they can roam from basically to get to the food trough and back, and that's about it. So the Australian free-range claim is in court. They're saying that consumers need to have confidence that any product labeled as free-range meets the expectations and in relation to the animal husbandry standards. At the moment, there's not an Australian standard to free-range products, and what we do know is that consumers are paying premium prices for these kind of products, and it's the same thing here in the U.S. I mean, the whole free-range birds, it's very similar. It's probably a little more defined, but they never get outside, and they barely roam more than a meter or a yard from where they're staying. So the watchdog groups are over there in Australia. They're up in Canada. We're here in the U.S., and they're all trying to strive for better chickens lives. Okay, it's time to take a short to commercial break here then, and when we get back, we're going to welcome Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, and Peter's going to be taking calls as well as talking with us about chicken health. So stay tuned, folks. We will be right back.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird.
Need an incubator? Think Brensea, the incubation specialist.
Renzi has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, technology you can trust.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's EggCartons.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, folks. Welcome back to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to bring on our very special and wonderful guest, the most knowledgeable about chicken health care, Peter Brown. I want to call him doctor all the time, but it's Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. And Peter, here comes your drum roll. Hey, Peter, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us again. I always look forward to it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Great, great, great. Yeah, good. Really, really well. Good. So with Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, he is taking care of all kinds of events that's happening at his homestead today. So he'll be popping in and out.
Okay.
So it's pretty much just you, me, and the chat room here for most of the show. And were you going to continue on with the topic from last week? You're on every Monday, which is just amazing.
Yeah, what I was thinking of doing was we never finished up the chronic respiratory disease, the CRD, so if we wanted to run through it quick and finish it up, I can give a quick overview of it and then go to whatever else you want to do after that, or we can talk about a couple other things, whichever you want to do.
Okay, that sounds great. And if anyone that has questions, just post them in the chat room. Please put them in capital letters so they catch my attention. Sometimes that chat room text goes by awfully fast, and I don't quite get a chance to catch it. So yeah, CRD. In fact, I'm just looking back at my notes here. That is exactly where we ended.
Right.
So we're about
halfway through it, roughly, maybe a little bit more, but there's a few more things that are worth talking about. We had first said it was a mycoplasmal bacteria and that it didn't live well outside of the bird's body. That mycoplasmal means that it's small like a virus and it doesn't have a cell wall. One of the other things that mycoplasmal tag indicates is that it is extremely host-specific or host-dependent, more accurately. In other words, it depends on the host to get some of the amino acids and some of the other products from the host that it needs to survive. So for several reasons, that reason and the fact that it does not have a cell wall, It doesn't transmit as readily as other bacteria, nor does it transmit anywhere near like a virus would. So it's a slow spreader, easily disinfected against outside the bird's body. I had last time a sheet that I got from the University of Georgia, their research on it as to how long it lived outside the bird's body. I don't think there was anything on there that really had this organism living outside the bird's body more than 3 hours or so. Its main method of spread besides bird-to-bird contact is through the hatching egg. That's the major way that this disease generally does spread.
Mm-hmm.
We also talked about it being a difference between chronic respiratory disease and mycoplasmosis and so on, and the difference being a true case of CRD would involve E. coli, as well as the Mycoplasma gallisepticum, or just for short, MG. The two of them together, the MG and the E. coli, would constitute a case of chronic respiratory disease. Very old terminology. We've kind of separated them out in most most quarters these days. Many times, some of the experts, when they talk about mycoplasma, they hardly ever talk about E. coli unless that's something they found as a mitigating or another problem that's just added to the original problem. So if you had like an E. coli infection by itself, we said that would be a case of air sacculitis.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a case of just the MG, then you would have a case of mycoplasmosis. If you had the two together, you'd have E. coli and the MG, then you'd have a case of chronic respiratory disease. Then if the E. coli had ventured out of the respiratory system or was just in the gut, then you would have a case of what we would call coli bacillosis. That's most recognized by a white watery diarrhea. Then some of the symptomology of the mycoplasma organism, you can get a snotty nose. Generally, there is no smell involved unless there is a secondary bacterial infection, which would be similar to coryza. Coryza by itself doesn't have any smell. It's when it's complicated with other bacterial infections that come along. And they're opportunistic. They're not what we call first invaders. The first invader would be the mycoplasma. Secondary invasion would be the other bacteria that may come along, whether it be E. coli or Pseudomonas or something along those lines. But those things would be the different organisms that cause some of these things. Again, we said it was something that's host-dependent, so it depends on the chicken and in order to survive and to spread. It is spread throughout the bird's body, more or less, ends up in the air sacs. It ends up in the lungs, the trachea. They call it colonization, where they are able to take a swab and put it down the bird's throat and pick up the actual mycoplasmal organism. The birds are generally affected: chickens, turkeys, Japanese quail, pheasants, bobwhite quail, peafowl. Pigeons get it, but they generally have a different different type. There has been some isolation of it from ducks and geese and your citicine birds, which are your true parrots and parakeets and macaws. But they're not generally your primary thing. It's this unknown thing where you have a bird or a flock that's infected. You don't know who's got it, and it's passed on through the egg. When we test those birds right after they're hatched, there is no footprint of the mycoplasma at all. It's kind of a disease that will stay dormant for a while until the bird is stressed in some way, shape, or form. When that stress takes place, then we'll start to see birds turn positive. And many times that's what we see. Birds look the picture of health, and then along comes the cold weather. We're starting to come into cold weather. I've noticed a few people have emailed me that, they've had colder weather and birds are starting to stop from the nose and sneezing and coughing and so on and so forth. So it is a disease that can just hang out. and be brought about by these other outside parameters, which would be the cold weather, the change in weather from hot to cold. You get these real cool nights. Even here, we've had some real cool nights lately, and in the day is up to 85 degrees. That big temperature swing from 60 to 85 or so really makes a difference for these birds. Some places here on Saturday morning, it was so foggy you couldn't see anything. All that moisture in the air with that coolness brings all these things out. The handling, moving, vaccination, breeding, all stresses which can bring this out as well. Lots of times you won't notice it until the birds, you've got a lot of money in them, and all of a sudden they start coming down with the symptoms. One of the tip-offs to this generally, because none of these symptoms are ever set in stone 100%, is that this will very slowly spread through a flock as a general rule, unless over the years there has been a bunch of problems that were never addressed with the mycoplasma, and then you might have more birds infected than most. But through attrition, mortality, selling, so on, usually a flock is not 100% infected. I've only seen about a 50-50. That's about the best I've ever seen, both on a commercial basis and on a backyard flock or a showbird type thing. So it's a slow spreader.
That was 50-50 what, Peter? 50% of the birds get them? Or
yeah.
Get the mycoplasma?
I've never seen a flock that was 100% infected, never.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know exactly why that happens. A lot of it has to do with exposure. If you've never been exposed to something, you're more than likely not going to catch it. It just depends. You know, maybe they were those particular birds were medicated at one time and didn't pick it up. There's just can be any reason for them actually not coming down with it. So, but you know, in birds that are producing eggs for the family, you might see decrease in egg production. Growing birds, we see what's called stunting, where the birds, you have some birds that they're very viable and they're very vibrant and they're growing very, very nicely, but their siblings are doing poorly and you can't figure it out and there's nothing else going on. There's no coccidy, there's no worms. You might want to give mycoplasma a look, and then you look the birds over real good. One of the best times to examine your birds is after they've gone to roost at night. And I've probably said this before, when the pen is or the chicken coop is dark, take a walk inside, just step inside and just be quiet and listen to them. You'll hear them, if they've got something, you'll hear them coughing, snicking, snorting, the whole bit. If you don't hear anything, probably pretty good. But most times that's when you can hear it, when it's quiet.
Interesting. And then, Peter, given the way the weather is getting now with more humidity and they're more likely to pick up a mycoplasma infection, is there a preventive thing we can give them, like you were talking about maybe with the turmeric, or any recommendations for it?
I don't believe in using antibiotics as a preventative, and I'll tell you my reasoning behind it. Number one, you wouldn't medicate every day of the month. That's the number one reason why it's not going to be effective. Number two, consider that there's at least 30 days in a month. Most medications you would want to give for at least 10 days, in some cases 14 days. If you did that, what would happen the other 14 days? What's going to protect them? So that kind of doesn't work. I think that you're better off keeping birds in good health. Other things bring down the immune system and compromise the immune system. When I say compromise, there's nothing basically other than Gumboro disease, which would be an early in the bird's life disease. But there's nothing going to really bring the immune system down, so to speak. Nothing dismantles it or takes it apart. It's just that it's not as complex as ours is, and it can't handle 14 different things at one time. So usually what happens is the first thing that comes along that upsets the bird, that's the one its immune system is more or less preoccupied with. And the next hanger-on that comes along and piles onto the pile, it gets some attention to the immune system. But after a while, the immune system just becomes overwhelmed, not because the immune system is deficient. It just can't handle it. It's kind of like, you know, trying to get 5 tons of stuff on a 1-ton truck. It just doesn't work.
Oh, my.
And,
yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing there. So keeping the birds in good health, no worms, no coccidia, keeping their stress levels down as best you can, and I almost hate the word biosecurity, but, you know, the less people you can have visiting your chickens and handling them and going through your coops, the better off you're going to be.
Okay.
I see it every day. I deal with it every day. People call me. Somebody gave them a bird, or they went and they rescued a bird, and while that's a very charitable and nice thing to do, I mean, it's like the Trojan horse. You know, you let it into your flock, and all of a sudden all these things, you know, come out and start causing you problems that you never had before. So it's a matter of watching what you're doing, being careful about it. And I really can't mention that enough. That is probably your best bet, a closed flock as best you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly there's free-flying birds. We know that they you know, pigeons and all these grackles and junk out there, not much you can do about them. But, you know, the more scattered your birds are, the less chance they'll come in contact with some of this stuff. I don't believe that is as big a problem as some people might think, but I may be wrong, but that's just the way I see it. Most of this stuff is spread from people who don't know what they have. I call them feather merchants. When you see them on the boards and so on, all they want to do is sell their chickens, and they don't care whether they're sick or not. They're not interested in recognizing it. I've seen it here just recently in the past week. Again, somebody selling birds that should have been left where they were. And, you know, when the person approached me about it, I told them that. When you go to somebody's farm and those birds already are sick, you should run like hell.
Uh-huh.
I mean, run like you're 18 years old again, because I'll tell you, you just don't want it. I mean, I couldn't fathom going to somebody's farm and picking up 5 or 6 birds, or one bird that, you know, was knife-breasted and dirty and whatever the case. And, you know, I mean, you know, the old adage, live and learn. And I'll tell you what, you will learn. Because mycoplasma, very difficult to get rid of, very, very difficult. Usually it's a test and slaughter type disease in order to get rid of it. You can, in some cases, medicate your way out of it, very, very costly. Medication for long periods of time. And I'm not so sure in some of these cases where these things were medicated that, you know, they are just medicating it and keeping it suppressed that way. Because generally what we look to do with mycoplasma, it's not just testing their blood and seeing if they have antibodies. What we want to do is we want to look for the footprint of the disease itself. And by that, you'll all remember the PCR testing they did in the O.J. Simpson trial, the test they used not to convict him. But they use that, it's a genetic test. It picks up the genetic footprint of a specific disease, and it's very, very accurate. And use a tracheal swabbing generally to do that. You don't use blood as a general rule. And, you know, if you're medicating birds and they are not showing any antibodies and they're clean on a tracheal swabbing, then I would probably say you beat it. The way to find out is to get them off all medication and leave them off, see how long it lasts. And that's the problem with the premise that has been mycoplasma positive. Very hard to clean it up and get rid of it.
Wow. Well, now, Peter, supposing one goes to a show like at Crossroads coming up in Indianapolis or the Columbus Nationals,
yeah,
and they bring home a bird. What's your advice on how to handle that to make sure that it doesn't bring something into your farm?
Yeah, here's a couple of quick tips. Go and find. Let's say you're in the sales section of the show barn, and you want to pick up a particular bird. So you look at the bird, and you decide that's the one you want. Get permission from the owner to handle the bird. Pick the bird out. Look it over. If it's got parasites on it, put it right back where you found it.
That's
number one. Because if it isn't good on the outside, it probably isn't good on the inside. And, you know, it's just a good idea to do it. Try to buy from people who have been in the business a long time and are known to be reputable. Ask around. Get the breeder's name. Go ask some people. Go ask some judges. Don't be afraid. Just go and ask.
Okay.
You know, 90% of the time, you'll be right. That other 10%, that's the chance you take by buying somebody else's stuff, just like a used car. You know, your mechanic goes and looks at it and says, yeah, that's a pretty good car. Rides around a block, puts it up on a lift, nothing leaking. You take it home, the engine blows up. So, you know, I mean, it happens. But, you know, that's one of the things I would do. Here's another little tip for you. Take the bird out of the cage, obviously, again, with the permission of the owner, and close the beak and put your fingers over the nostrils and hold it there for about 15, 20 seconds. If bubbles come up in the eyes, put it right back where you found it, because it's an indication it's an indication that there is some sort of a respiratory issue brewing. Okay? It's a little tip. A lot of people don't know. But generally, not always, sometimes, you know, and a lot of these birds don't show anything, again, until you get them home. That stress of putting them in a box and bringing them home, and now they're not with everybody else they've been with. They're in a new place, and this stuff starts showing itself. You'll wish you had left it back in the show barn.
That's a really good tip. And what about quarantine? What do you suggest about that?
30 days minimum, hand a little bird, do the same thing, open the beak, look in the mouth, give it, you know, you don't have to beat the bird up, but be a little bit rough with it to an extent. Don't namby-pamby it, because you want to stress it. You want to make sure that it's got nothing that's going to drop in your pen. And, you know, close its mouth and its nostrils off for about 15, 20, 30 seconds and see. Those bubbles come up in the eyes, you know you got a problem. You start looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really great tip, Peter.
You know, open the mouth. Look, is there anything growing in the mouth that shouldn't be there? If you're not sure what it's supposed to look like, take a bird of your own that you consider healthy. Look at it before you even go there. Memorize what's there. You start seeing little white spots in the mouth, put it back. You start seeing these orange-yellow buttons in the mouth, put it back. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, it's very, very simple. Look at the droppings that the bird's dropping out in the cage. Okay. See if the owner has bothered to come by today and see if there's food and water in the cups.
Oh, okay.
A lot of them don't. A lot of them don't. They put food and water in there the first day, and because all they're interested in this. Yeah, oh, yeah, I've seen it many times. Now, if you're going to show a bird, here's another tip for you. It is allowed, from what I understand, to put a piece of cardboard on either side so the bird next to you can't see your bird. You want to do that especially with cockerels because they just love to fight. And some of these bantam hens can be pretty tough too.
Yeah.
I've seen them go through the cage and grab the other one by the head and just pull. And you know, once they pull a few feathers out, there goes the show. So you can do that. Get a nice piece of cardboard, cut it out, and put it in the cage there on that side and on the other side. Is it 100% that it's going to keep everything from coming on your way? No, but it's better than nothing.
Absolutely. You know, and
better
I haven't seen that often at shows, the cardboard thing. Not that I, yeah, but it makes sense that'd be a really good thing to do.
Yeah, you know, you buy a bird there or you show a bird there, get some rubbing alcohol, put it on a rag, wipe the bird off on the outside, wipe its face, wipe its legs, wipe its feet, wipe its all its feathers, best you can. Something is better than nothing. To know that you tried and failed is a hell of a lot better to know that you didn't try and you failed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it. You know, same thing with doctoring a bird. You know, you can either let it die, which is a person's, you know, free choice, or you can do something about it. And if you don't know what to do, do something. That's
yeah,
all.
There's a comment in the chat room from Sarah saying if the bird's owner is there and you're shutting off the nostrils, they might be a little upset that it looks like you're suffocating the bird. So
better you look like you're suffocating the bird than you look like a horse's patoot when you get it home and it starts snotting from the nose and the eyes start swelling and then everything that you've worked your butt off to, if they don't like it, too bad, put it back. They're not the only breeder around, you know.
Yeah,
it is a problem. It is a problem. I mean, there isn't any question. And I will say this, and I don't care what show you go to, there is very little caring about birds that are sick within the show.
Really?
Unless the bird is damn near falling over in the cage, nobody's going to say anything. I've seen it time in, time out.
Wow.
Okay. The only place that I've ever seen them physically take birds out, and I'm not saying this hasn't happened other places. I don't see everything that goes on during an entire show. But the only time I've seen it happen, I went to a show down in North Carolina one time, and that was only because the way they operate there, anybody that needed pilorum testing done or didn't have their paperwork with them had to have the birds pilorum tested right then and there, and they have their Department of Agriculture guys doing it, and then they walked the building, and they made several people take their birds out because they were sick.
Wow.
But you don't see that all the time. The state is not, and it's not, you know, only down there because what they're trying to do down there is they're worried about mycoplasma and pilorum because of the big turkey population they have. Mycoplasma is deadly to turkeys. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
In North Carolina, you can't vaccinate with even a killed mycoplasma vaccine, let alone a live one, without the state's permission. And to do so without their permission, obviously, is against the law, and you get caught, and they don't like it. Trust me.
I trust you, absolutely. The chat room is loving what you're saying here, Peter. Tater's saying, tell it, Peter, amen, brother.
Well, I mean, most people know me, tell it like it is. You know, if you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. That's for sure. And I would say that to any breeder that's out there. And to go one step further, okay, there are a tremendous amount of breeders out there, okay, that that just have tremendous birds and tremendous health. And you, before you even think of buying a bird from the guy, how healthy is the flock? So he lies to you, okay, but at least you got some information. Secondly, what do you vaccinate for? Do you vaccinate for Marek's? Do you vaccinate for Pox? Do you vaccinate for LT? That's very important. And if you vaccinate for LT, what manufacturer's vaccine do you use? That's very important. And the reason that's important, I know we're off topic a little bit, but this is worth throwing out there because that show is coming up and people are going to go there and be buying a lot of birds. If they vaccinate for LT and they don't use one of the tissue culture vaccines, then the bird you're going to bring home will be a carrier for life if they've used one of the chick embryo vaccines.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Now,
true with Marek's too?
Pardon?
To become a carrier?
No, absolutely not. That's bull. That's bull. Nope.
Okay,
the Marek's vaccine is not a Marek's virus. It is a turkey herpes virus that just happens to protect against the Marek's virus. It can in no way, shape, or form give your bird Marek's disease. If you vaccinate your bird and they come down with what you believe to be Marek's, then they had to be there prior to. The vaccine cannot give it to them. And
okay,
that is a fact. And that is straight out of the mouth of people who have worked on it. Dr. Bruce Kalanick, I think he's a professor emeritus from Cornell now. I knew Bruce back when I first got started in the business. And I have a paper here somewhere where he has made that statement. Okay, that comes out. And trying to think of the other guy. I know these guys. Don't see him as often anymore, but it doesn't matter. It just doesn't work that way. It just does not work that way.
That's really good because we had it on our show earlier that Marek's could, in fact, I'll go back to my notes here, that could make a bird become a carrier. And so I've heard both ways, so I'll take your version of it.
Well, I'm just telling you what the truth is from the people that have done the research on it and the people that know. Trust me, if this virus were able to be put into just a few birds, okay, and it spread bird to bird, the commercial poultry industry would jump on that like you wouldn't believe because they just vaccinated a handful of birds, put them in the house, and the other 100,000 you don't have to do.
Okay.
Now, there is a difference between the Marek's vaccine that the fancy and the backyard folks are using versus the vaccine that the commercial people are now using. Now, if you get into, and I can't remember all the different ones they have, but one of the ones that came out of Europe called a Rispin strain, that is an actual Marek's virus. Now, that one you can pass around.
Okay. So it's...
Okay, and you don't have access to it because when I say you don't have access to it, it doesn't come freeze-dried like the other one. Those come in combinations the regular standard HVT Marex with the SB1 with the wristbands, all of those. I'm not sure about the SB1, but the wristbands, it doesn't really matter. But you can't get them in that combination.
Well, how about the hatcheries, Peter? Which one do the hatcheries use? Because that's where most of us get our.
My guess is the hatcheries are going to use. They are going to use the HVT. They're going to use the herpes turkey virus more than likely because it's going to be the cheapest.
Okay.
Because it's you don't have the exposure in the backyard, nor usually in the show arena that you would have on a commercial farm. Okay. Most of your combination vaccines are used in commercial layers and in the broiler industry.
Okay. So if we're ordering chicks from one of the hatcheries, then it might be a good idea to ask them, do you use turkey herpes or do you use the what do you call it, the freeze-dried version?
Well, they may get the HVT in a frozen state as well. That does come that way.
Okay.
Or at least it used to. I mean, I've been out of that part of it for a bit, and I don't follow it quite as much because I don't have that much interest in it. But the vaccine that we sell and most other vendors like myself is the freeze-dried HVT. Okay? You can't get the others mixed in with the HVT. It just doesn't happen that way. Because the commercial people, all of their vaccine comes in what they call an ampule, and it's frozen in liquid nitrogen. Okay?
Whoa.
And that's less cost for the manufacturer because then they don't have to put 10 in a little box and all that kind of nonsense. They just they put them on these little metal strips that they get dropped down into the liquid nitrogen, and they're in little glass ampules. But that's how that generally works. But no, the standard HVT freeze dried that we're presently using will not give the birds Marex whatsoever, and that has been worked to death.
Excellent.
You know, as far as the research on that is concerned, that's just people that have again gone out here and don't have the facts and espoused what they believe to know. You know, getting behind a keyboard lots of times on these sites is really interesting because people they get that power. I'd rather go from the scientific side. That's where I work from. I do have that here. You know, I do have that to back up what I say. It was from one of the proceedings from every October, November out here, 20 miles from where I live. They have people come from all over the world, and they talk about chickens and stuff out here. And it's from one of those proceedings that I have his statement on that fact that it doesn't spread, which I already knew before that, but that just kind of backs it up.
Okay. Well, Peter, it's time just to take a short commercial break.
Okay.
And we're talking with Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. We've been talking about mycoplasma and also tips about how to pick up birds at fairs or the chicken shows, the poultry shows, some really good tips. And when we come back, Peter, I've got about three or four questions here from our chat room that we'd like to maybe answer. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be back in just a moment.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, hens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
In reality, I am Super Chicken.
Oh, yeah!
Well, alrighty, welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles Talk Show. Our special guest today is Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, and we've been talking about respiratory diseases and how to pick up birds at poultry shows. And now, Peter, I've just got a couple of questions for you here in the chat.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
Peter.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sounded a little distant there. First question is comes to us about antibiotics, wormers, and eggs. This is from Sarah, and she says, we've talked about this a lot of times before, but it's like a cloud almost. We can't get a definitive answer and probably never will. But she wants to know is, unofficially, what do you use as a period of not to use the eggs after you worm your flock?
Three to four weeks. Three to four weeks is my personal opinion. If the birds are really what I call a prolific layer, if they're birds that lay eggs every day, my personal feeling is I wouldn't have a problem probably going with 2 weeks. It's a matter of cleaning out the larger ovums that are already getting ready to ovulate, which are going to have the most mass in them and possibly have the most residue of the wormer within them. But other than that, I don't see it, you know, as being that big a deal. Again, it comes down to the sensitivity of a person to any residue that may be in that egg.
But okay. And then the residues, I mean, people take warmers, you know, Peter, is it toxic, or do we not know? I mean, I guess
no,
the question
some of these,
is...
Some of these warmers have been used in humans.
Right. I mean, they're identical.
Mm-hmm. That still doesn't alleviate the situation where, you know, let's go back to penicillin. Penicillin being, to my knowledge, the medication that people worldwide are most sensitive to. So from that standpoint, if you were giving your birds penicillin, which is done many quarters on a regular basis, commercial poultry are medicated with penicillin daily, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It works for some clostridium that they have, some problems that they have, and it comes in a big bag in powder, and they just put it in drinking water, and it's sold by the ton,
right.
Basically.
Yeah.
If they don't have a reasonable withdrawal time, I know these are meat chickens, but if they don't have a reasonable withdrawal time on it, and that gets either into the processing plant or makes its way through the processing plant undetected, you know, there's a liability exists there. That's all I've ever said about it. Personally, for most people, I don't care what they do with it. It's their call. But she's asking the question of what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're not good layers, 3 to 4 weeks. If they're good layers, I'd probably cut it down to 2 weeks.
You just don't know.
I mean, look at what we're going through now with a lot of medications. Now, you go to your doctor, and your doctor gives you a medication. Yeah, most of those have been tried in people somewhere along the line. But, God, some of them, when I had my car accident, I've got prescriptions here that I had filled, and after I started reading the side effects, I said, I'll be damned if I'm taking this. It's still sitting in the cabinet.
Yeah, really?
Oh, please. Yeah, heart attack,
okay.
Stroke. Yeah, I could just see that. Man puts cream on hand, has stroke. Real smart. You know, error on the side of caution. That's the way I operate. You know, it's a lot easier to say I didn't do that than to be walking around drooling out of the side of your mouth.
Well, and I got to tell you too, as a pharmacist, Peter, I always recommend that people read the fine print and know about their medications before they take them.
Yep.
Because it's the side effects. There is not a single drug on the market that is effective that does not have a side effect. I mean, that's
is because of the tremendous population that we have. Everybody's not the same.
That's right.
And older people, you don't metabolize things as efficiently or as well as you did when you were younger. So that adds into it as well. I mean, just be careful. But they gave me this cream to put on my hand for arthritis and stuff, and I said I'd rather put up with the pain. I couldn't use my hand, but that's okay. You know, I'm a little about it from the way I looked at it. I said, this is my luck. I'd put the stuff on my hand and croak about 5 minutes later.
Well, that can happen, or you start to drool, or you pass out, or whatever. But
exactly.
Some of the drugs, they're not all innocent. I mean, they're just because they're small and you pop them doesn't mean they're innocent. There have been several follow-on questions about the warmer, Peter.
Okay.
Now, I know chickens can be relatively resistant against roundworms anyway, but the question is how often should one warm their flock? Sarah hasn't warmed hers in over 2 years, but they apparently seem to do healthy, and she does do a good job of keeping the coop clean. Does that help?
Yep, it helps to a degree, but the vectors are when when your bird is outside eating snails and eating earthworms, while it's all nice and good, and to see a big old slimy worm hanging out of their mouth, it's kind of cool looking and everything else. that's probably where they're going to pick up those worms that you're talking about. But I feel. Personally, I feel the best way to do this is to, and I've said it on this show before, is to become a poop inspector. When you've got your birds penned up at night and they're all on the roost, let them out and make sure they all get out when you open the door in the morning, and then go right in there if you can and start looking through the poop. Take a stick, move it around. If you see anything moving, crawling, or whatever, then you need to pick that dropping up and assess what it is. What's crawling in there? Is it a tapeworm, which would be segmented, flat, look like a vacuum cleaner hose, or look like in the early stages look like it's pieces of rice. Does it look like spaghetti, which would be a roundworm? Now you mm-hmm. said, you know, chickens are resistant to roundworms. See, I don't know. It depends again on exposure. You know, if you'll never
right.
have a cold if you don't get exposed to the either bacteria or virus that's going to give you that cold.
Right. Now, aren't some of the worms too small to see? And if so, would having a little home microscope be handy?
Yeah. Fisher Scientific used to put out a real good field pocket microscope. I've got one in the office here somewhere, and it's, I believe, up to 150 power. It's illuminated. Runs about $100. Worth having in your pocket. With that, you could even do a flotation test and take that and make a smear and see if you've got coccidiosis as well. So it's a real good tool to have, you know, and I don't know if it's gone up from $100, but that's right around where it was, between 75 and 100 when I bought mine years ago. But it comes on a little stand. The stand comes off so you can put it in your pocket and just flip it on, and it's got a little light on it. You put a couple of batteries in it, little double A's or triple A's, whatever it is. But worth having, worth the price.
Now I know what to add for Christmas, Peter. Thanks.
But that's what I would do. You know, I don't think I would necessarily get into worming on a regular basis, because then you start to get into throwing eggs away forever if that's what you're going to do. So I would go on what we call on an as-needed basis. If your birds are getting dumpy or you suspect worms, something like that, and you know it's not coccidiosis and whatever, maybe it's time to worm. But a good worming program, if you're not eating the eggs, if they're just pets and you just like to have them around to look at, like a lot of folks do, then I recommend the Wazine in the water once a month, and then maybe every second or third month switch off the Wazine and go to some Levisol in the drinking water. Get some of the worms that the Wazine doesn't get. And then maybe once or twice a year with the Valbazin. I like the Valbazin because as it comes in its container for other species of animals, it already has a label on it for tapeworms, whereas the Safeguard Fenbendazole does not.
Okay. And so that was a pretty important, what you just said there, Peter, mm-hmm. if we can just repeat it. You're talking about fenbendazole to maybe start with and
right.
then follow that with Wazine?
Yeah, fenbendazole is the active ingredient in the wormer Safeguard.
Right.
Okay. And the Valbazin is a trade name. Albendazole is the active ingredient in it. It's slightly stronger. I believe it's 11.6% for the albendazole and 10% for the Safeguard. Now, they've tried to push the Safeguard for worming dogs and stuff and goats with worms and stuff, and it hasn't been as successful, to my knowledge, as they would like. And that's because it doesn't have as great an activity against the tapeworm as does the Valbazin. Because
okay.
if it did, they would have put it on the label for the species that it was intended for in the first place, which was cattle and goats, not goats and sheep.
Okay, got it. But do you said to use one and then a little while later, 10 to 14 days, use
right,
another one to get the
eggs? Right, because the Wazine, strictly roundworms, nothing else. Okay?
Okay.
Where if you go to the Levisol, you'll get roundworms, gapeworms, capillary worms, and cecal worms. And
excellent.
Cecal worms
okay.
being the worms that can cause blackhead, it's nice to keep that part of the bird cleaned out.
No kidding. Right.
And then if you go to the Valbazin, which is a little bit more laborious because you've got to mix it up and then give it as an oral drench down the throat. I've got some people that do it. They'll take a piece of bread and they'll put the 2 cc's mixed on the bread and give it to the bird, and they go off and they take it and eat it, and they do it that way. But that will get your tapeworms and most of the other worms as well. So you're just kind of covering the bases. The problem with all of that is that when you get on a program like that, now when do you eat the eggs? I mean, you know, so I have the two-program approach. For those that don't care whether they eat the eggs and just want happy, healthy birds to have around in the backyard to look at and so on. And I've had several people email me, too. They like the idea of the 5-gallon bucket turned upside down, sitting out in the yard after you've had a rough day either with the kids or work or whatever the case may be. and watching the birds in the backyard. I get people all the time that do that. I've got one customer that writes real nice stories about her whole flock and what's going on in the barnyard. And I sit and read them. Believe me, I'm glued to this damn computer more hours than you people think. But I do read them. You send it to me, I read it. And some of them I respond to where it requires it. But at any rate, that's what I would do as far as the worming is concerned. I'd have the two-pronged approach. Become a poop inspector if it's the eggs that you're really after, and only treat when you really see a sign of it. If you suspect there's something in those droppings, take it to the vet. Take it to the vet. Let him run a fecal sample on it. Can't charge you a lot. If he charges you $20, big deal.
Yeah,
charge him more than that. Tell him he's a thief. Because it's the same thing looking at a roundworm and a dog and a chicken, basically the same thing. So he'll be able to identify them real quick. So that's what I would actually do rather than going on a tear worming, again, unless they're just, your regular backyard chicken that you've got for enjoyment.
Okay. Well, that's excellent, Peter. Thank you. Really, really clear on the worming. This next one is about a rooster. They have a rooster called Fiesta, and he's 7.5 years old.
Okay.
And he's had two episodes about when they put him down in front of his water, he couldn't stand, and then his head fell over. But he came back around, and he sleeps an awful lot. And the thing, there's a little bit of history to him. One of his girlfriends pecked his bad eye, and that eye got infected, and they're on Murison right now. So apparently he's having spells. Does the bad eye have anything to do with the spells, and what might be causing the spells?
Just look at the proximity of things. Right behind that eye is the brain. And if he's got an eye infection that's really bad, I would consider using not only an antibiotic for the eye, I would definitely use one for the body. I would choose the cephalexin, tremendous product for getting out to the soft tissues, the skin. We use it for bumblefoot all the time. We use it for comb infections. I've got a client who had a raccoon in the middle of the day attack one of her chickens, and I saved the picture because it is the worst beak injury I have ever seen. There is no beak left, top or bottom.
Okay. Peter, we've generally got like 3 minutes left, and there's one more question, if we could answer that. And that's probably an easy one for you. It says, what's the best all-natural treatment for scaly leg mites?
I would probably say something in the oil line, maybe like a peppermint oil, but you can't get one that's going to be too strong, that's going to burn. Whatever you want to use on the bird, I don't think that most of the natural ones are going to work fast enough. I like, which is not a natural one, I know that's not the question, but the permethrin works well. It absorbs directly into the skin in a matter of moments. The scaly leg mites, for all intents and purposes, are done. As a precaution, we come back in 10 days, 2 weeks, do it again, and that's dipping them in a solution of permethrin right up to their thighs. And the reason I like to get it done quickly is because you have to remember that these mites are eating the flesh, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's ever had chiggers, that's just what it feels like for that bird,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So the quicker you can get them over it, and I would opt for a chemical solution before I would go to the other ones because they just take too long.
Okay, so you suggested some sort of like an essential oil, like peppermint oil, and I've had really good luck with sulfur, like a 5% sulfur in an ointment. I'll put a little peppermint oil in next time.
Well, there are things that that obviously would work. The idea is to smother them. There is some value to a product like Vetrex, which is an all-natural product. Okay, it comes in a 2 ounce and a 32 ounce bottle. And you would put that on, and it has camphorated oil, oil of oregano, oil of balsam, and so on in it. But for me, getting it done quickly is the key, okay? Because I can just picture these things eating away at this bird's flesh, and I can feel it on myself when I think about it.
I know, and they spread, so it can spread pretty fast.
Yeah, it's just something you want to get rid of as quick as you can. And I understand the natural part of it, too. I do understand that.
Okay. What about tea tree oil?
Tea tree oil may very well work. It's expensive. You don't get a whole lot for your money, but tea tree oil can work for some of these skin type problems and some of the mites. I would consider the tea tree oil. I forgot about that one.
Okay. Excellent. Well, we're just about out of time. We've just got 1 minute to go. So our special guest today has been Peter Brown, the chicken doctor of First State Vet Supply. And you can see his website at chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. That's his email address, chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. Peter, thank you so much. It's always incredibly informative, and I enjoy your answers and your being on the show incredibly. Thank you.
Talk to you next week.
Okay, very good.
Bye-bye.
Peter is with us every Monday, so if you want to really learn the basics of chicken health, tune in every Monday with Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. Our chat room chickeneers, we certainly appreciate you, especially today. The questions have been absolutely phenomenal, and thanks so much for participating so actively in the show today. Blog Talk Radio provides our radio chat and the video services. Andy Schneider, the chicken whisperer, is the creator of the show and, of course, the wind under our wings. I'm Pat Foreman, and from us all, from absolutely all...